Broadcasting live from the Wake Forest Business Radio X studios in North Carolina, it's time for Metro Raleigh Business Radio, where business leaders in Raleigh come to tell their stories.
Hello, this is your host, Anne Ravel Petcher on Metro Raleigh Business Radio, here in the studio today with our producer, Reed Powell.
Hello, Anne. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
You keeping Wake Forest warm for us?
It is pretty warm today. I don't know if that's me, but yeah.
Maybe it's you.
It could be, I guess.
Oh, well, we're going to have a great show today. This is my last day as host of this show.
That's right.
Kind of sad, isn't it?
It's bittersweet.
But
yeah.
I've got such great guys in the studio with me that I'm just going to have a blast.
Awesome.
Cool. Let's start out by introducing Sean Olson, who's the CEO and founder of CloudWise. Hello, Sean. Welcome back to the studio.
Thank you, Anne.
Sean's been on before, but not in this studio.
Wilmington office.
Wilmington. Gotta love that. A first-time studio guest today is Tom Sullivan, who's the who's with OBX Computing Corporation. He's a co-founder and CEO. Welcome to the studio.
Hey, Anne. Thanks for having me.
Really excited to hear about your new project. That's going to be great fun. And then we have Jason Warren in the studio with us today, who's with Avalara, new to our region. We're so happy to have you here in Raleigh.
Hi, Anne. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm so glad you're here. This is how long have you guys been in Raleigh now?
Oh, gosh. About 2 years.
Oh, you're kidding.
Almost,
How did I miss that?
Well, you know, we acquired a company, and then time started to fly. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Well, tell us a little bit about Avalara.
Yeah, Avalara got its start in 2004. And it's focused on cloud-based tax calculation. Sounds riveting, I know. But we've stuck with our core and we've expanded. And a part of that expansion was acquiring a company here in the Raleigh area.
Who was it?
Tax Technology Services.
Okay.
And their focus was actually on the opposite side of calculating tax, exempting from calculating sales tax.
Interesting.
So now we have both sides of the coin. But we calculate not only domestically, but also all over the globe. So there's value-added tax to deal with as well.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's actually really interesting what you do, because I think that most people don't think about what it's like to have to deal with figuring out taxation as a business, especially independent businesses, trying That's to right. figure out if you're selling online, you have to X amount of money in this county, but across the street, somebody else could be a totally different amount, right?
That's right. And whether you're a large company or a startup, it's equally as difficult, especially as you start to expand. You expand into other cities, other states,
mm-hmm.
And outside of the country. And so it becomes exponentially more difficult for businesses. And they really just don't think about it.
Yeah.
Especially when they're in startup mode.
So what is the current core technology that you guys use and the kind of problems you're solving right now?
Well, a lot of the core technology is built from the ground up, but certainly we use a lot of Microsoft-based technologies.
Okay.
We use a lot of Amazon-based technologies.
I don't know why. You weren't founded in Seattle, were you?
We were. It's true. It's a true statement. But it allows us to scale. And because we're sticking with our core, and that is tax compliance, we mm-hmm. just recognize that it's an issue all over the globe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are there a lot of companies doing that? Or are you pretty unique in this environment?
You know, there's a few companies, three or four companies that have been doing it for about 40 years, but they've been doing it enterprise-based, right? So to go to the cloud, Avalara was the first to do that. We've had some that have tried to emulate what we're doing,
mm-hmm.
But we still are by and far the leader in the space just because it's complicated. And
yeah.
like you said earlier, it's just not what a lot of people think about
sure.
until they have to.
Yeah. Why is it great to be in the cloud?
Scalability.
Uh-huh.
Speed of transaction.
Mm-hmm.
It allows us to not only calculate at a local level in an accounting system, but also in an e-commerce shopping cart. And when you're doing e-commerce transactions, they tend to be higher volume, and they tend to be, just require that speed, right,
yeah.
within the shopping cart.
Yeah. yeah. So it sounds like e-commerce is a core market for you, any company that is an e-commerce-based company.
Yeah. You know, and that, you know, our focus was on accounting products, Great Plains, QuickBooks, but
mm-hmm.
it very quickly kind of took its own lead, right? An SDK just happened. The SDK being e-commerce, right? Software development.
I was
going
to say that
kit.
Maybe
yeah.
your engineers would not like to know that it just happened. They
well,
probably actually worked
yeah.
on that a little bit.
Well, it just happened out of demand, right? We said, here's our open source.
Mm-hmm.
Developers started to use it and said it's really easy to use, and they started to plug it into shopping carts, and so we started to standardize connectors for a lot of the mainstream shopping carts that are available today.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because the Triangle has a lot of e-commerce marketing companies based
okay.
here. Do you find any overlap in the kinds of work that you do or any partnerships that you're starting to see come together yet?
You know, quite honestly, you know, we've been here almost 2 years. I feel like we're finally starting to get traction.
Yeah.
And starting to get to know our neighbors, if you will. So that'll start happening very quickly.
Yeah. Especially with your new office in Durham.
That's right.
So tell us where you're going to be.
Oh, gosh. We're going to be at Diamond View 1, overlooking the stadium. We're going to share a building with SunTrust.
Nice.
Yeah. So very exciting. And we have about 110 employees here and going to continue to grow.
So tax compliance, that's kind of how you position this, right? So
What
do businesses need to think about in terms of tax compliance?
You know, they need to think about their growth strategy. Is their growth strategy going to be specific to the state that they're in? Mm-hmm. Are they going to be regional and maybe go outside to three or four other states? Or are they looking to go national, for example, right? And so, or even global.
Sure.
Right? Because, you know, a lot of times if you call even the North Carolina Department of Revenue, it's really hard to get any sort of answers out of them. They're not going to give business consulting, right?
Oh, right.
They're thinking about it from an audit perspective. Mm-hmm. They're thinking about it from their perspective, right? And so you just have to think about, what are my risks? What are my exposures? How does this align even with my 5 or my 10-year plan, right, as far as growth?
Yeah. So what kind of changes have you seen recently in terms of legislation about this taxation? And I know that there was a big discussion about tax collecting on, you know, for e-commerce for quite a while at the national level.
Yeah.
What kinds of things are you facing going forward?
You know, we're seeing a lot of buzz even at the federal level, although this is a state and local issue, at least it is today.
Right.
And there are some that are trying to make it more of a federal issue, much like value-added tax is in other countries.
Right.
But what we're seeing is a lot of states look at things like sales tax because it's, for them, in their minds, easier to get more money from a retail transaction than to maybe levy school taxes, things like that, right? They're looking for the areas of least resistance.
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing a lot of changes at the state and local level around sales tax, which invariably just makes it harder for businesses, especially when the auditor comes in to do an audit and you feel like you're going into that unprepared as a business owner.
Yeah. You know, I think e-commerce companies at the very beginning were thinking of a no-tax environment for the internet, right? And slowly they were like, well, if you're in North Carolina and you sell to someone in North Carolina, you have to collect the tax. But then maybe they weren't collecting tax for South Dakota.
That's right.
And so that's starting to change, right?
It is
changing. The states need to be able to collect that tax.
Yeah, you know, and one of the companies I mentioned earlier, Amazon, seems to be kind of, causing that ebb and flow, if you will, right? Because for the longest time, they were fighting that, fighting tax, and now they've actually embraced it.
Mm-hmm.
For lack of a better word, if you can embrace sales tax to a business. But we're seeing those changes, and we're seeing the fact that, you know, internet sales are the same as whether you go into Target or Walmart.
Yeah, right.
It's just the mindset's always been, well, it's up in the cloud somewhere, so it doesn't really have jurisdiction. There's a warehouse or warehouses. There's somewhere, you know, right. On the planet.
Yeah.
So there's a requirement.
Yeah, I'm guessing the states really love having someone like you guys around.
Well, yeah, yes and no. We're there for the businesses so that they become compliant.
Sure.
Right? And auditors typically will run their analysis and only do an audit if it's going to get them at least $30,000 in back taxes and penalties. Otherwise, they're going to move on to the next business.
Wow.
So really, you know, our core is to just help businesses be prepared. But you're right, ultimately, by being prepared, they're going to be paying taxes on time, which is going to be a win-win.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are your plans for the future here? What's Avalara in the Triangle going to be like 5 years from now?
Oh, man. Well, the reason I moved here from Seattle, our corporate headquarters, is because the vision is really to make this the headquarters for Avalara long-term.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Avalara is making significant investment one of the executives I'm aware of is actually relocating out here really to help and to drive that growth.
Holy smoke. That's very cool.
Yeah, it's very
exciting.
Well,
then welcome even more.
Yes, thank you.
That's really great news. Well, if somebody needs to know more about your services, how do they get in touch with you?
They can go out to avalara.com. They can find us on LinkedIn or Facebook or Twitter. We're always out there in the Twitter sphere.
Just look for the orange, right?
That's right, the bright orange. We love orange.
That's cool. We're going to come back and talk to you a little bit more in just a minute. I want to spend a minute with Tom Sullivan. Tom is the co-founder and the CEO of OBX Computing Corporation. Tom, tell us a little bit about OBX and what you guys do.
Well, first of all, OBX, we are North Carolina-based, and we couldn't infringe on the Outer Banks, so OBX means outside the box, and that's how we've approached our thinking relative to our network and ultimately our data cloud services company. But what we did was we have taken LED lights, and we have added a microprocessor to those, and Wi-Fi meshed those lights together to form a platform. And from that platform, we will be able to deliver control services, communication such as Wi-Fi access points, and ultimately distributed data centers in the structures that we install the platform.
Wow, so that's pretty cool. Okay, everybody out there in Radio Land, think of an LED light. Now think of it extended a little longer, right? Extend the base of it a bit.
Yes, depending upon the form factor or the design of the bulb. It could be a troffer light or a flat light that's in a commercial industrial setting, or it could be your traditional, what they call Edison bulbs or the screw-in types
of
bulbs.
And then what do you do to that bulb? How do you make that a Wi-Fi hotspot?
What we do is we add a processor to it that has antennas and ports associated with the module. So we'll have a processor that you would have in a laptop computer. We'll have our Wi-Fi antennas, and then we'll have ports that we can add sensors to it, such as CO2, motion sensors.
So this is the control part?
Yes.
So you've got the there's a 3C thing going on here. So you've got the control, which is controlling the lights, controlling access perhaps to rooms, given video, giving sensors.
Right.
Then the other part is the communication part.
Right. Communication allows the Wi-Fi mesh network to each access point that it's attached to, in this case lights, to act as either a Wi-Fi hotspot to gain access to the internet or to extend internet connectivity in a specific location.
Interesting. And then to that you're adding computing.
Compute. That's the last of our third C's, as you referred to. And compute will be when we add a large enough processor to the LED lights. We mesh those all together and aggregate all of that compute capacity to, in essence, create a quasi-server environment that we can deliver data center services just as they're delivered from brick-and-mortar data centers today.
Okay, so this is a lot of aha going on here. Help businesses understand how they can work with you on a project like this. And what are you going to solve for them ultimately?
Yeah, we have decided to go after the commercial and industrial market first. Eventually, I think we'll end up in residential, but commercial and industrial first. Number one, LED lights are the next green frontier.
Sure.
There are a lot of incentives and rebates offered by utilities across the country and actually across the globe that hope to migrate lighting and create more efficiency in the lighting environment. So we're going to, in essence, ride that wave and add technology to it. You've heard a lot of, or you may have heard a lot of lighting companies discuss where they want to do, they see lighting playing a more an important role in people's lifestyles. Well, here's a great example of that where we can substitute communication and Wi-Fi access and extend it to other areas that are currently underserved. Someone, you know, a large cable company isn't going to lay fiber out into the rural, remote areas.
Nope.
We could add our module to streetlights, and those do extend out into some of these rural areas and allow for access points for some of those folks that are on the fringe, if you will.
Wow. Okay, so that's pretty cool. So you would then not use necessarily, you know, a Time Warner or something to that effect to get the internet that you're providing. You would use 4G or?
Yeah, we could. It could be an Ethernet-based fiber connection, or it would be a wireless connection, such as a 4G LTE with one of the current telecom companies.
Oh, that's really cool. So you have a patent on this?
Yes, we do. We filed it earlier this year, and we filed also for the accelerated review process, so we'll have that determination by October of next year.
That's great. Okay, so there's one date. You're not really shipping these yet.
No, as a matter of fact, we've just moved from a prototype, our final prototype, to our first commercial installation in the form of a pilot at where our offices are at HQ Raleigh.
Okay, very, very cool. So you have a series of pilots that you're installing. Tell us, can you share any of those with us?
Sure. This, as I said, this first one will be actually replacing four lights that are in the office that I have that will allow us to demonstrate the control and communications. Okay. We've also added a motion detector and a camera for that.
So you can see who's coming.
Exactly. or my partner up in New York can keep track of me, make sure I'm in the office working.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
But up in New Jersey, my partner is in his town of Cliffside Park, New Jersey. He's working with the library, the municipal building, and a small park in that town to provide a series of products. The first is to upgrade the lighting in the library and extend Wi-Fi and add cameras for security. The next phase of that project would be to provide free Wi-Fi access in a park located in the town. And the third piece of that would be to upgrade the lighting and internet connectivity for the municipal building that they have.
Okay, so how do you do it in a park?
In this specific situation, we're going to, again, take LED streetlights and add our module to them.
Okay.
And again, this will be an outdoor environment, so we have to have a
different environmental precautions.
Exactly, to make sure we can brave the elements of the Northeast.
So are you targeting most of the things you've talked about in terms of the places you are right now are either public or publicly funded in some way? Are you targeting government-related entities with this, or
yes, you know, these municipalities and government entities that also are being driven by federal compliance rules for energy efficiency. Lighting again has become a reasonably cost alternative to that, as LED lighting, the cost has come down and the quality of the light has improved over the last few years. So the
not quite as blue as it used to be, right?
Exactly, it doesn't hurt your eyes after 10 minutes, but certainly that is a way to significantly and quickly reduce energy consumption is by upgrading the lights.
So your target markets then, first of all, you're not geographically limiting your targets, right?
No, in fact, we have had inquiries from all over the world, everywhere from Mexico City to several countries in Europe. Mm-hmm. And as many of us may know, that Europe has been much more progressive in how they have addressed certain energy conservation measures, and energy efficiency and lighting is an area that they're very interested in.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. So are you working with people who are building owners? I'm trying to think of, you know, how you open the door. Where's your first big sale going to be? What kind of an environment do you think?
We've targeted a couple. We mentioned the municipalities. Mm-hmm. And again, the other thing that's helping us here is there's kind of a forced demand being created because they need to hit energy efficiency standards in a certain number of years. One of the reasons my co-founding partner is up in New York is they've got very aggressive standards. As former Mayor Bloomberg left office, instituted a requirement where all of the multi-tenant buildings have to have 24/7 lighting in all hallways, common areas, and stairwells. Well, you know, the most efficient way to meet that goal is to go to LEDs.
Right.
And then we can add different services that people can, business owners can decide whether they want to offer enhanced, as I said, internet or whatever the products might be. They can also have this opportunity to add cameras or other types of sensors to even squeeze more energy efficiency out of the upgrade to LEDs.
So how does your solution play into the Internet of Things? It seems like there's a logical connection there somehow.
We believe there is. Right now the Internet of Things is very fragmented. There's very few common factors between all these different devices and control pieces that are out there. Lighting is everywhere in our society.
Sure.
And we think that by building this LED-based platform and being able to provide a common connection point for all these different things, and again, regardless of whatever network protocol they currently use, this light-based platform could be a connecting device for all of those pieces that are out there now.
Yeah, cool. So if a company's sitting there thinking, well, this might be something I could really use, or I'd like to partner with these guys, how do they get in touch with you?
We have a website, obxcc.com, and my direct email address is tom@obxcc.com, and you'll find us on Twitter also.
Very cool. We're going to come back and talk to you in just a second, so hang tight.
Great, thanks.
And now I get to speak with Sean Olson, who's the CEO and founder of CloudWise. Hello, Sean.
Good afternoon.
How fun that we both had to come up from Wilmington to meet in Wake Forest.
Weather's great here as well as it is in Wilmington, so I'm good.
So, Sean, tell us a little bit about what CloudWise does.
So just like Jason and Tom mentioned, everyone's kind of utilizing the cloud. We build it. So a lot of businesses and companies that are growing and developing will come to us and really try to find out how do they bring their company to the web from an operation standpoint. And ultimately, we do that for them.
So what's the benefit of going to the cloud if you're a business?
I think the reason that everyone utilizes the cloud and its mechanisms and data centers and such is to really mobilize their workforce and add, like Jason said, the scale. I mean, in essence, the scale of any business that works for us from 2 people to 200 people is the same. And whether they start at that level and grow up, they do it right. It doesn't have to be quite as painful as it used to be.
Yeah. Now, you're headquartered in Wilmington.
We
are. Is that where most of your clients are?
A bulk of them in southeastern North Carolina. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't necessarily mean that all the businesses actually do business there. So right. We have a lot of people that have... one of our customers has 75 reps, and they're scattered among 42 states, and all of them utilize our cloud products. So
tell me about the kinds of companies that want to go to the cloud that haven't gone to the cloud yet.
All of them.
All of them. Every company.
Well, I say that because most businesses, there could be a business case. What we sell ultimately at the end of the day, and I know you and I have spoken about this offline, is focus. Mm. So a lot of businesses get caught up as they grow, and they kind of grow a little, and then they stop, and they grow, and then they stop, and they try to figure out how to deal with the growth. And technology today, I mean, plays a really big role in the growth of a company and how they scale it. And once everything starts in the cloud and it's built properly, adding a second office is just a matter of calling up your local service provider, getting internet, and you're up and running. So,
interesting. Okay, so you offer cloud services. You also offer a few other services.
We offer a lot of services. So
service-oriented company here.
We are. And we are ultimately at the core of us is a consultancy. Mm-hmm. Now, we do build our own products and deploy all of our own products. But at the end of the day, most businesses that come to us really don't know necessarily what they want. They just know that we sell insurance and we want to do it everywhere and we don't want to deal with this stuff. And so we really deep dive into the business to find out, you know, which products make sense for them, whether it's hosted voice, cloud computing, virtual desktops. And then we help them build, manage, and scale and grow that as well as maintain.
Yeah, so you have sort of a support team as well.
We do. We have a full help desk.
So I saw a recent announcement, I think just last week, that there's a rumor that you're deploying a new wireless internet service provider platform.
We are. Ultimately, one of the challenges that I think that most cloud companies have had is they manage the data center side of it or they manage the user level side of it, but they don't really connect the dots. And obviously the connection for any of the companies at this table is internet access. Mm-hmm. Kind of the secondary, tertiary, even quadrary markets, a big challenge that they have is the infrastructure is generally weak in those places. So we actually have spent about a year and a half, 2 years really trying to find the best product. And most companies that do what we do don't really go to this next step that we have gone to. But we ultimately knew that we had to own that from start to finish with our mm-hmm. customers, and we really wanted to try it in our hometown. And so we have I guess about 8 locations, so 8 towers online. I think we're closing on the final 4 right now, which should be live, I guess, next week.
Oh, wow.
And once they go live, a company, at least within our town, within our region, can call us that's starting up a business, has a business, whatever the case may be, and we can take it from cradle to grave. So we'll build the solution, we'll deliver the solution, and manage the solution.
So I want to dig a little bit deeper on this WISP, this fixed internet, why do you think that this solution needs to be brought into a place like Wilmington?
We can go faster. So the technology that exists today is a lot different than it used to be 10 years ago. We're able to offer fiber-based internet speeds via our network now, and we can deploy it a lot faster. I know one thing that we didn't talk about is what makes our internet product a little different from the rest, but we specialize in dedicated access. So we only work with businesses. The network's really clean. It's designed for cloud services, whether it be hosted voice, whether it be hosted desktops, phone, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, because really, I suppose if you're moving your operations to the cloud, you better have a darn reliable internet access point, right?
It's a challenge most of our competition is faced too. When they leave it up to the end user, they're generally going to pick the cheapest solution that's out there.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
And we know that doesn't work. They'll focus a lot of time and what's the uptime of the data center, right? Or what's the uptime of my help desk? But they never focus on what's the uptime of my internet. Hmm. And if all the other products are at 100% or near 100%, which I think today's day and age they generally are, if you're putting it over a 80% or a best effort type connection, you just put a bottleneck in place.
Yeah. So how do you help them over that? How do companies get to the point where they're willing to say, yeah, I'll spend a little bit more money on this?
So for those that are willing to take that next leap and to listen to a company like ours, we're not the only game in town, but that listen to a company like ours, they need to do it right, or they should just keep everything locally. So I think that's a challenge that we always face. Dedicated access does cost more, no matter what town you're in, whether it's sure. Seattle or Durham or Wilmington, and you have to put a focus on that. I think without the internet, I don't think any of the businesses would be here, including Business Radio X.
So. Probably not. So explain how dedicated internet is different than best effort internet.
I think the mechanism that people use to explain it most, and we use it as well, ultimately is think of it as a highway. So if you have a large highway and ultimately with the best effort connection, as long as that highway is generally clear, everything runs pretty well. Mm-hmm. But as soon as we start to add congestion or add cars or bodies, whatever the case may be, the highway starts to get congested. Mm-hmm. And if you think of dedicated access as your own lane. So you can manage that lane no matter what kind of money you put into that infrastructure. It's your infrastructure. If you need it to be fast, if you need it to be steady, whatever the case may be, we can manage it a lot better than a highway that we have no control over.
I think about wireless, and I worry about things like security. It seems like once you send something out over the air, anybody could grab that piece of air and there's my data. Why is that wrong? Why am I wrong thinking that once I throw data into the air, it's a little more accessible?
So ultimately, the answer to that is the security is really should be left up to the business itself and managing the security on both ends, not necessarily the security of the internet itself. The internet as it exists today is not secure. It's open, no matter who you are, whether you be, an Avalara, or whether you be, a Pfizer or any of the large companies that are out there. You have to be prepared for that because you will have remote employees. You can't manage every other endpoint. And so, honestly, a large part of what we do is to help the customers with that. We have security that we manage on both ends, and it's done on a per-session basis, on a per-user basis. So no matter where the customer is or the user is, when they log into, a secure connection is made. From a security on the wireless side with our network, we obviously manage that on our back end. If you think about what the customer would actually have versus moving with a company that's doing this as their full-time job,
right.
The customers that are out there generally are doing nothing at the end of the day. Even if they're buying a firewall or something off the shelf, it's rare that they ever even set it up. So
the real benefit here is the confidence that you're helping your client build in their technology system.
Totally, yes.
Yeah, that's great. So if somebody is in your region or even a little bit broader and they want some background information, how do they go to hold of CloudWise?
Web's always the best place to start. So www.cloudwise.com. There's all kind of mechanisms at which to get a hold of us there. And we always funnel traffic through our through myself as well. So just Olsen at cloudwise.com.
And that's S-E-N. And Cloudwise is
W-Y-Z-E.
Exactly. Excellent. Great. Thank you for your time, Sean.
Definitely. Thanks.
So let's chat for a minute about where we have some overlaps here. I think probably we've seen everybody sort of taking little notes and everything. It seems that every single person at this table is internet-centric and cloud-heavy. That seems about right. Is this where the whole market is moving?
Yeah, for sure.
So all business is moving to the cloud, and everything's required in terms of internet access.
If they're not, they should be.
Why?
Because I think people realize at a certain point that if they're doing it at home or in their own business, they have to manage their own IT. They have to manage their own technology. And whether you're doing your shopping online or you're running your business online, you're able to offload that put that off to somebody who's the expert.
I mean, you've looked at other businesses have gone to third parties to do things. I mean, you outsource HR, you outsource all sorts of different functions now, and I think this is just a continuation of that same theme.
So does that, from a business perspective, I wasn't a business major, so from a business perspective, where is that going to start sitting? I mean, it used to be the CTO or CIO, but it seems now it's like cross-function. I mean, the CFO, I would assume, at Avalara, you see CFOs dealing with things like cloud and internet all the time.
We do, yeah, and I think we're actually, finding, new roles for the CTO, right, and new areas of focus for the CTO, and those, I think those titles will evolve. We'll see those titles evolve as far as based on their area of focus.
Yeah.
I still don't think there's still a place for that. I think the businesses that are out there will be tech-centric. So the CFOs that are out there, I think, will start focusing on IT strategy instead of keeping a server online, which no one should be doing today. So there's people out there that do that really well, not CloudWise, but there's tons of companies that are out there. And so once the business can focus, I think you said it best, Jason, the businesses are focusing on what's next. What's my growth strategy? What's my growth pattern? Am I going to be at 50 employees tomorrow and I'm at 10 today? And each one of those mechanisms take a different course.
Yeah, interesting.
As a former financial executive before I changed hats, I certainly agree that the CTO function has evolved and needs to continue to evolve because they're asking for a lot of money.
Right.
You have security issues around data and things like that mean more to the business overall. So their, I guess the expectation of them isn't as Sean said about just, keeping things up and servers running and things like that, but it goes well beyond that. And the cloud is the most economical way to do that. And again, security continues to increase and all of those good things, you need to balance that out. But I just think it can't go anywhere but.
Yeah. I know we really see this in the marketing world, that the role of the marketer is much more technology-centric than it ever was. I mean, people who were in marketing 25, 35 years ago, total different ball of wax. We were still doing print marketing, right? Not anymore.
Marketing's even in the cloud now with Bronto and Marketo and
exactly.
All of these cloud-based marketing
exactly.
platforms.
Yeah. Well, this was really interesting. Do you guys have any questions for each other before we...
No, an observation. We were talking about this platform that we're building, and as I listened to the other guys talk, one of the things that we're headed on our product development plan is to actually create these data centers that I mentioned, but we would go back and offer a business and environment where you'd go back to dumb terminals, and Avalara's software would be running through the lights above that, and they would access to, put in their sales tax data or file their forms or whatever. That service would be delivered differently, arguably, than loading it on individual machines or
right.
something like that.
Yeah.
In our world, I mean, just the whole business side of compute has done a complete 360. I mean, I've started in IT, I guess, about 20 years ago. And when I first got into IT, I was actually pulling terminals out. We were bringing Novell offline, bringing Windows online, and putting kind of the power of the desktop in front of people for the first time. And now I'm doing that again. So we're ripping servers out, and everything's going back to centralization of IT, which makes sense. It makes complete sense. But now the experience for the end user from a terminal standpoint is that of the desktop, which is awesome.
Interesting.
It's like fashion, wait 20 years and things will change back to what you were doing 20 years ago, right?
Yeah, that is actually true. It's kind of scary, isn't it? What kind of person actually makes the purchase decision for Avalara? Is it usually the finance person?
Finance is involved. It's typically the head of whatever department probably at a VP level that's driving decisions for the most part. Unless it's, I guess, maybe affecting the company to a point where the board might need to get involved, maybe.
Yeah, I suppose. Depends on the size of the company, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
In some cases, it would even be a company like ours. We actually work with a lot of our customers that utilize Avalara. And so having it to be the easiest to work with sometimes wins the game. It's probably been the success of Avalara as well, as if they were to look at themselves versus their competition.
Yeah, you know, and if you're talking about the customer side as far as who's making that decision, Sean's exactly right. I mean, it's going to be the business owner, the controller, somebody at the finance level typically.
Yeah, interesting.
We've got a little interesting conundrum, if you will, that we've gotten into as we've started to roll this out and talk to more and more customers, is the property manager or property owner versus the property manager. Someone that runs the day-to-day building versus someone that owns it. If it's owner-operated, you know, let's say a company owns it and they occupy all the space, that's easier. But you have a building manager, building management company that may be looking to keep their jobs in some cases or keep the scope of control that they do have, and the property owners may have a different view of that.
Interesting.
Show them how they either make money or save money. That's all you got to focus on.
Right.
That's right. Yep. That's the bottom dollar, isn't it? Okay, this was great fun today, guys. Thanks so much for your time, and best of luck to you going forward, watching your companies grow. Looking forward to it.
Thank you. Right.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. And until next time, whenever that might be, this is Anne Ravel-Petcher signing off for Metro Raleigh Business Radio.